Hello, everyone. My name is Ryan Griggs, and I'm the host of Regenaissance Podcast. And today alongside me is Travis Brown, a former MMA fighter turned regenerative rancher. Thank you for joining me.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me on.
So I guess to really get started, because I'm looking back on the podcast I've done, I have not spoken with many first-generational ranchers. So I'd just love to hear, what was the impetus to starting Browsy Acres?
Yeah, so really what it came down to was knowing where our food came from. For being former elite athletes, both my wife and myself, you know, I'm a avid bow hunter. I like to get out there in the mountains and challenge myself, but also the sweet, amazing payoff is some of the best protein that you get, you know, that God put on this beautiful earth. So that is something that I love to do. Unfortunately, I live in Southern California, so there's not a lot of hunting to do around here. You know, it's just packed with people. So we moved out here to where we live now, and we have a couple of acres. So it was like, what are we going to do? You know, let's use our money to need less. And also that solves the problem of knowing where our food comes from. So we started, just like with any first generation or anything, like that, it started with chickens, right? We like wanted to have eggs and have that kind of protein source. We didn't do broilers until we got the ranch, and we did it on a larger scale. But we would eat like if we had, you know, five male chicks, you know, we'd raise them to harvest, you know, leaving one rooster, whatever. And then it grew into, like, what if I can't get out to hunt, right? Like, what if that happens? Then we don't have a couple deer or an elk or something like that in the freezer. Well, let's start raising cattle. And so we're like, let's get our feet wet. I did an incredible amount of like research, all the online research, right? And asking people like what they thought, asking actually chefs like what they thought and of what beef and you know, a lot of people in general and online and in person were just like, Wagyu's the best. Like, you can't go wrong with it. And if you're going to do it on this small of a scale, see if somebody will sell you one calf. And took about, you know, 4 months or so to in order for me to get my hands on one. And we raised him out. He was about 33 months at the time of harvest. We had him for about, I would say like 14 months. And he came from who is now our partner. So, you know, he had gone through with me and he helped me set up the feeding regimen for him and all that kind of stuff. And we raised him here, you know, and my wife and I was so emotional that day, but we harvested him. And for me, I wanted to take emotional responsibility, right? Instead of having a stranger pull up in his big box truck, you know, pulling him off, singling him off from the other animals. And he's like, what's going on? This, that, and the other. And then, you know, just having that stress, and stress hormones is a real thing. If you've ever raised an animal, getting them ready for harvest, the stress hormones are real and it can really change the meat. So what we did is, here at the ranch, I just pulled them out to this nice open area. And for like a week before, I would feed them in the same area where I knew I was going to harvest them. And that day I put his feed bowl down and his feed dish, you know, with hay and grain and stuff like that. And just went ahead and took care of business. And it was just another day for him until it wasn't, you know, and it was the most stress-free, emotional on my side. It would have been so much easier to just be like, yeah, you go take care of them in the back, you know what I mean? And yeah, all that stuff. And I feel like we owe it to animals to do more for them, especially with their sacrifice of feeding our family and giving us the amazing nutrition that they do. I took it on myself and I did that. We took up the hanger steak. It's something that if you let it dry age too much, it'll kind of shrivel up and get small and whatever and not be the best. So we left the hanger steak here, which if you know the hanger steak, it's a great cut, but it's not like your ribeye New York and fillets and stuff like that, but it's a great cut. We cooked it up, and at that time, I had no idea how to cook a steak, right? I just threw it on the grill and salt and pepper and whatever, and that was it. I mean, I knew that I didn't want to season it too much because I wanted to see what we produced. Salt and pepper. My wife took a bite, and she was crying, and she was like, this is the best steak I've ever had. You know what I mean? I was like, oh, whatever, you know, like she's just emotionally connected to this animal. Like, come on, it's whatever. I cut into it. I take a bite. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is like life changing. This is so good. And it really, after learning more about it, at the time, I really didn't understand what we did. Right. But I knew that whatever we did, it turned out and made this amazing protein, this amazing steak, best steak that we've ever had. And so I called up our partner now, and I said, when do you bring the next one down? You know, because we just absolutely love this. This isn't going to last long in our house. We have two teenage boys, myself and Rhonda, and we knew this wasn't going to last long. So we got to get on to the next one, you know. And that's where it kind of started. You know, that's where Browsy Acres really started, was that moment of raising our own food, taking responsibility of knowing where our food came from, knowing the inputs that went into that animal, knowing that that animal had an amazing life. We'd go out there and we'd scratch them and love up on them. And just, he was like, he would chase our goats around. He would like, he'd be laying there and headbutting the goats, and then they would all be laying together, passed out. You know what I mean? So it was like, he had an amazing life. And he'd follow us around in the backyard when we'd go over there, go down there, and he'd just like kind of nudge me to scratch him and love up on him and all that stuff. So, you know, the guy had the life. He was the prince of this place. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's like that husbandry, that taking care of that animal and the inputs, knowing the inputs that went into the animal and what it produced, it really started getting the mind going, the gears turning, and there needs, like, I need to find out more. I need to know exactly what I did. And Daniel helped me with that. That's our partner now. You know, with the feeding regimen, and him and his dad have gotten down to like the scientific level of inputs that we're putting into this specific breed, with both our full blood and our F1s. F1s are Angus Wagyu mix. And it changed, and it's different for the two, because the two are the same breed, but different animals, right? You have the Angus side on the F1s, and then on the full bloods, you have just Japanese Wagyu. So they've developed this feeding regimen and what we're doing. And now that we're a part of it, Rhonda and myself, we told ourselves, we're like, hey, we want to get into this. And my partner had, you know, the troubles of him being a first generational rancher, you know what I mean? And finding the capital and the ability to expand his operation, that was very difficult for him to do. He was going to have to sell, you know, 60% of his calves in order, or 70% of his calves in order to feed the rest of his herd. So, you know, that's when I saw the opportunity. I was like, I want to do this. Like, this is going to set us up to have a nonstop stream of amazing protein for me and my family. And one of the beliefs that both my wife and I have is we want to use our money, our platforms, to need less, right? So if we're investing in this cattle ranch, that means that we'll never have to pay for beef protein or chicken protein again. Like, this is going to support our family, right? Like, like in that way, at the very least, if it doesn't make money, right? And that was, again, going back to how this all came about, was just the desire to need less and to bring, knowing where our food come from for our family. And then Browsy Acres was, let's expand this to get this to more people that have that same thought process. Like, you can be okay with buying your beef from us because we care about these animals. We treat them with respect. And I was where I was going with it before was the regenerative model. So Rhonda and I said we were going to get into this, but we're going to do this a different way than the traditional cattle rancher. We want to be a regenerative ranch. We want to put more into the ground than we take out. And we didn't really know what we were saying at that time, because it is so much harder than you think it is. And it's so much more expensive than you think it is. But it's not unattainable for people that are out there trying to figure out how to do this, right? Rhonda and I were blessed. We worked our butts off earlier in our life. We were able to earn quite a bit of money. So we were able to scale, put this at scale fairly quickly, where I think, like, with people that don't have that same opportunity, if you just start smaller, right? You just start smaller and then you grow it. And by the time, you know, you are ready to be a full-time cattle rancher, that's when your kids can take over and do that kind of stuff. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And I actually applaud that. But we wanted to do this in the regenerative way and give back to the land that we take stewardship of, that we take ownership of, and feeding, like, everything from feeding the microbiome of the soil and all the different animals. Like, here we have a little, like, test pasture that I've done here, and you walk the fence line and we have like 3 more inches of soil than our neighbors. When it rains here, our horse pens and everything are littered with earthworms, because they're all coming out of the ground, right? Yep. There's like flocks of these little tiny birds. You can see them in the summertime when the sun's setting, running through and snatching up all the insects that are now a part of this little ecosystem that we've created. And it's like there's so much more life. Excuse me. There's so much more life here. There's more, say, rabbits and ground squirrels, and there we have like a, I think it's called a Cooper's hawk, that hangs out here because this is like his hunting ground. You know what I mean? So it's like seeing all these animals just all of a sudden show up. It's real. Like, it works. You know what I mean? And that's the amazing thing. And I haven't had to do anything. Like, we set up water catchment, right? And that's the thing, is there's the infrastructure side, the water catchment, getting water to the thing, and having it not cost us $1,000 a month, right? I put in 25,000 gallons of water catchment here. And then feeding, you know, getting the sprinklers set up and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, we get little, it's only maybe like an acre or something like that, but it's like we parcel that off by electric fence and, you know, have the cows come in and eat it down and then move them the next day and move them the next day and move them the next day until they've gone through the whole acre. And then I pull them off of it, right? Because that's the biggest part, or a huge part that people don't do, is they don't let it recover. And so this is like my little test pasture here. And it's been amazing to see. And the animals absolutely love going on it when they get the chance. So, I mean, I can keep going on forever. You know what I mean? Yeah. About what God has said to it. And I don't want to just, like, you know, take up 15 minutes of time going on a spiel. But
no, this is great.
Man, it's turned into a passion of mine. You know, it was like, oh, I want to go and do some cowboying and stuff like that too. Man, I want to learn about dirt. I want to learn why should we move our cattle in the afternoon instead of in the mornings? Right. And people don't think about that. They look at grass and they're like, it's just grass. But no, the sugars in that grass go from the roots all the way up to the top of the leaf the most by the afternoon. So if you want your cattle to get the most out of that grass, you move them in the afternoons. You know what I mean? So there's little things like that where it's like, wow. And then you start to see the difference in your land and what that's able to produce for your animals. And then it starts becoming like real. And then you start listening. Now I can understand like a Will Harris and a Joel Saladin and these like kind of like they're like crazy about it, right? They're nuts, you know, but for a reason, because it actually works. Like if you if you put this regenerative system and practices in place, it'll pay off.
So this was all incredible. Before talking with the regenerative aspects of everything, I mean, I heavily relate to everything you just mentioned, especially with, I remember whenever I was on the farm seeing earthworms and thinking about that as a kid, you used to just think they're so nasty, but that's actually a great indicator of your soil health. Mm-hmm. And then on top of, we would also rotate our cows in the afternoon. So that's really interesting. But I want to go back to Kobe, the very first cow.
Yeah.
Because you also mentioned that you would hunt a lot, but the experience of raising Kobe and then harvesting him and actually eating that first piece of steak, I guess what was so different about those two different experiences to where the second one with Kobe just seemed, I guess, just very emotional with you? And just, I was just curious to hear those differences from all the types of hunting you've done to now you have Kobe, and then, yeah, you went through that whole process.
Yeah, so hunting, right? You are in that animal's backyard, right? Everything's working against you in hunting. You have to figure out the setup. You have to, like, I don't like to do a lot. I really haven't done a lot of like tree stand hunting or blind hunting. I think I've done it twice. I do a lot of spot and stalk, and that's like my thing is I love to do that style of hunting over anything else. I don't like to sit and wait. I like to be proactive. So when you think about hunting, you are in their backyard, and I'm a bow hunter. So I have to get close enough to them to put an arrow in them. This isn't, I walk over a ridge and I have an open, you know, valley in front of me at 500 yards and there's an elk standing there and I take care of it. I walk over the ridge and there's an elk standing in the middle of the field of the valley over there. I have to go and sit in the tree line and see which direction he's going to go. And then I have to make a move because I have to get within 30, 40, 50 yards of that animal, right? It's completely different bow hunting compared to rifle hunting. Rifle hunting has its own set of challenges. Don't get me wrong. And there's a skill set there. But for me, bow hunting is where it's at. So I feel like that was a challenge and I won, right? I ethically harvested this animal in its own backyard. I overcame, say, the challenges or obstacles that were set in front of me, and I made that happen. And don't get me wrong, even that in its own can get emotional. Well, I remember when I made my first kill and it was like, you know, I just had like the jitters, you know, and you get those jitters and you're like, oh my gosh, like, you know, you just take deep breaths and there's, you know, and when you walk up on that animal, and every time I walk up on an animal from the life that I took, I always put my hand on an animal and say thank you, and we're going to make the best of this. I thank you for your sacrifice, and that's how it has to be. I mean, not trying to get all super hippie with it and all that kind of stuff and like life force stuff, but it's like, dude, this animal just gave its life to feed my family, to give nutrients to my children, to me, myself, my wife and my children. Thank you. Raising Kobe, was like a different set of emotions, because in that split second, I almost sensed like a little bit of like, I betrayed him, you know? he was like a buddy of mine, and then I put a bullet in him. And that was the tough one for me. Since then, I've gotten better about that, right? And I understand that they're here for a purpose, and I know what I'm going to do, and I've done it before, so it's not as, it's still emotional, and I'm still very thankful for this animal, but like Kobe was my first, right? And that first one I'll always remember that one.
I completely agree with all that. So I've never hunted before, but I was also vegan for 2.5 years. And then coming back, and then a year later, I switched into agriculture, and I remember harvesting rabbits and then chickens and then just so on and so forth. It made me start really thinking about just all those experiences and talking with other farmers and ranchers and how much they truly care about the animals that they care for. And same for yourself, as you've been talking this whole time, it's very evident how much you care for that. And that was just one big, I guess, monumental shift for me was just the care for the animals. But then once you actually harvest, like you were saying, it's there for that purpose, and you gave them the respect it deserves, and now it's replenishing your body and your soul in a healthy way. And that's also why I try to, with Regenescence, try to preach developing relationships with farmers and ranchers and having these conversations. Mm-hmm. So Force of Nature is a really large bison company, and their main farm is right outside of Austin, and that's where I'm at. I haven't been able to go yet, but they do their own bison harvests, and just a lot of things like that is just really cool because it's very surreal seeing it in person, as you know yourself. But it just adds, I can't put into words, it just makes you feel so much more connected to this world, and then also just to yourself, because it's the food that you're putting into your body so you could thrive and survive as a human. So yeah, it's just really fascinating with that.
Yeah, and I've actually said it before, and what people don't realize, and this isn't in any dark, twisted way, but in order for you to live, something has to die, right? Like, when you get down to it, and it's kind of, people don't really think of it like that. They're like, oh, well, you know, and they kind of try to soften it up. But in nature, for something to live, it usually eats something else, right? Like, even like herbivores, I get it, but they're put on this earth to be a prey animal, right? For the predators, and there's a life cycle, and you know, that's something that we've gotten out of, and that's why we wanted to do the regenerative style of ranching by mimicking Mother Nature, you know, by putting the cows on a smaller paddock and then moving them every day. It's like mob grazing. It's like the big bison. It's like the big herds of bison in the plains moving because they're getting chased by wolves. They would stop and eat, and then predators would come along, either, you know, wolves or coyotes or people or whatever, and wouldn't push them on to the next one so they wouldn't overgraze it. You know what I mean? And so it's getting back to that natural cycle of things, I believe, is really what we need to get back to. And that's how this planet came to be, right? And we need to get back to that.
Agreed. So transitioning to the regenerative piece, how did you first hear about regenerative agriculture? Because did you start Browsy Acres, was it around 2017, 2018?
Yeah, so we actually started Browsy Acres here in Southern California. We just started, like I was saying, with chickens and a garden, and we would like kind of cycle through that. Whatever we'd pull from our garden, we wouldn't eat, our chickens would get it, and then we'd get the eggs and the meat from the chickens, and then we got into cattle and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So, 2017 is when that happened, and then the ranch really came about in 2020.
Because I know I heard on a previous podcast that you had Joel Salatin. Did he help out? So I'm just curious to hear just the process of starting this, because especially back in that time, I mean, 2022, that's still well before, I don't know, the last couple of years I've noticed on social media that's really picked up for regenerative agriculture. So yeah, I'm just curious, whenever you decide you wanted to do this and had Joel Salatin and others to help out, what was that process like?
Oh, I'm sorry. I actually had them in. We had them out in 2021. The ranch started in 2020.
I see.
But in 2021, when we actually, or the partnership, the business started in 2020. I'm sorry. I'm getting a little confused. But in 2021, we bought the ranch. Mm. And that closed, I would say, in like June of 2021. In August of 2021, we had Joel Saladin out. My wife was still pregnant and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, we had him out, and the reason that all came about was he is like the godfather of regenerative practices, regenerative farming, you know, with multi-species on the same ranch, growing crop. Like when he came down, he was like, there's so much potential for this place. I don't even know where to get started. He's like, you guys could put citrus orchard right there and it won't freeze because when the wind comes over, there's this, we have like four ponds on the property. By all, you know, and he said, as the breeze comes, it won't freeze the trees because it'll have to go over the water first and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, holy moly, this guy, like, there's just a wealth of information. You know, we drove through our pastures and we went through about how to set up irrigation for our property and how to, you know, to use the surface water and the ponds and everything that's already existing now, to irrigate that land, and then how to implement chickens and the numbers of cattle and chickens that we should try to aim for based off of our property. And he was actually apologetic. He was like, I feel like I'm setting you up to spend a lot of money right now. And I said, buddy, this is what we're going to do. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. this is what we want to do. And so it was like tearing down all the fences inside the ranch, rebuilding those paddocks and how we're going to rotate them and the way that we rotate them through. And now I'm going to a soil health academy. Have you heard of them? The understandingag.com mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So I'm going to their multi-species grazing and marketing clinic that they have up here in Tamales. Mm-hmm. So that I can just further my education, and it puts me in front of people that have an amazing understanding for this. And so I can ask all these questions that I just might have, you know, but always wanting to learn. So anyway, so that's why we got Joel out too, was we want to learn and we want it from the best. The guy that knows what to do in this, you know, like, because we asked him before, I said, do you know how to work like high desert regions? You know, because that's where we're at, is in the high desert region. He's like, absolutely. I know what I'm doing. It's like, of course you do, Joel. So, you know, he came out and he gave us so many opportunities to learn and so much information for us to move in a certain direction. And, you know, I would love to have him out in, you know, 3, 4, 5 years when everything's kind of implemented and working to its maximum potential. It'd be amazing.
Yeah, I'm sure that day completely changed how you viewed your land.
Yeah, and it really did. And it's like, I'm so grateful for that opportunity just to see the potential more clear now. Like, he showed me the potential of this property and what we could do with it and the amount of head that we could have on there.
Has Browsy, since starting that too, has this changed just how you view life as a whole? I know that's a rather broad question, but for me personally, I just remember the first day, because I worked on a farm in Pennsylvania, and this is just another reason why I preach to go visit farms and ranches that are open to that, is I can't put into words the transformation that it has. It's just, you feel so much, I feel so much more connected now ever since making that change.
Yeah. I mean, the sense of responsibility in my mind has tremendously increased. I know the work that it takes to get our, because our operation is basically like four different operations in one. We do everything from conception to consumption. The animals never leave our property until it goes to harvest. So we're not the finishers. We're not only the finishers or only the backgrounders or only the cow-calf operation. We're all of it, right? We are we fulfill from our ranch. We do it all. And in this regenerative model, I believe that's the best way to do it. You know what I mean? And knowing the responsibility and how much work that it's taken, I feel like I hold myself to the standard for all of the meat, all of the food that I eat or that my family eats, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, for instance, I think we're basically kind of touching base on it, but I eat about 6 meals a day. You know, they're all measured out at certain things at certain times. One of the things that I obviously don't go out and fish all the time, but my guy wants me to eat salmon like once a week. Well, I have to do some research, like wild caught salmon, not farm stuff, right? Like I have this standard, and it really is something that I've like broken up with our grocery store. And I think more people need to do that. And you touch base on it where it's support your local ranchers and your farmers. Get to know them. Know where that food is coming from and the practices that they implement. All of that is so important for your health. You know, I'm not trying to get all conspiracy theory, but it's starting to become science where it's like 90% of the food in grocery stores didn't exist 100 years ago, and 90% of the diseases didn't exist 100 years today that exist today didn't exist 100 years ago. And it's like almost like the drug companies and the food companies, and there's too many coincidences for them to not be in bed together. Hey guys, we're going to make them sick. We're going to sell them the poison so you can sell them the antidote. And it, like in my family, we rarely get sick. We don't have major issues. And we've been eating this way for the last 4 years, 5 years, right? Like, and before that, we would eat hunted meat. So that's as, you know, we'd go and get steaks, we'd eat out and do different stuff like that. And occasionally, even now, we do. And at that time, we honestly regret it. We're like, we could have made something better at home.
That's so true. I mean, also why I started Genesaunce is I have been very personally affected by it all from a family standpoint. But going back to the grocery stores, I saw a recent study that 73% of our food system is ultra-processed food, which is just mind-boggling. And what I continue to find is the more we go against nature, the more it responds. So with the food, for example, we eat all these unnatural foods, like you're saying, all these diseases that are so prevalent in America to where pretty much three-fourths of America is either obese, morbidly obese, or severely obese, and that trend's only getting worse. Mm-hmm. And then you have healthcare or pharma with Ozempic and all these other drugs that make everything worse. And then when you talk about agriculture with the conventional model, that's pretty much anti-nature. And how does that respond? Destroys the soil. We have the dust bowl, many other things with all the chemicals. And then you do the regenerative way that's mimicking nature, how that responds. You have more nature coming back to, like you're saying, with your farm. In Will Harris's book, he vividly explains that how growing up, nature started dying. And then as he switched to regenerative, he completely forgot how much nature there used to be. And so that's why education is just so critical with all of this. And like you were saying with the salmon, that's another huge thing that people really aren't aware of, because farmed salmon is horrific when you actually look into it, right? Compared to wild caught. And yeah, it's just, it's insane.
Yeah. And I think, and the thing is too, is we've gotten so used to, so I've, my daughter, who's 2.5 now, she's been watching Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, right? And that's what I feel like our food has gotten to. Everything keeps getting bigger and brighter, and you need more inputs for this. And it's crazy how that is cheaper than getting something that's a little more like single ingredient, you know, like farm salmon, for instance. How is that cheaper when you think about them having to build all the infrastructure to raise that animal, and then to get it to the plate so that people want to eat it, they have to dye it. You know what I mean? And then there's worms in there and all that kind of stuff. And then they're this big. And I have a bunch of wild salmon in the freezer and it's this big. You know what I mean? Like, people are getting used to these Big Mac sized portions of meat, and that's not normal. Like, for instance, I would say that one of the biggest comments on our chicken is that it's not as big as grocery store chicken. And I'm like, you're right. That's why we sell it by the pound, though, right? We don't sell it by the piece, because you might get one thigh from the grocery store that's a pound, but you're going to get about 3 or 4 from us that's a pound. You know what I mean? That, not a pound each, but combined. Because their thighs are this big, our thighs are this big. But the nutritional value of our thighs, you could eat one of our thighs, which is this big, and eat their whole thigh, which is this big, and have way more nutrients in that one thigh than they would in theirs.
So for the listeners that might not realize why, can you explain?
So there's it's how they're raised. It's what they're fed, right? And the absence of hormones and steroids and antibiotics, because that kills all the micronutrients in that animal. When you combine all those three and the fact, not factory farm, the animal, commercially raised animals like chicken and pigs and when they raise cattle that way, if you've noticed, if you are the kind of person that goes to a restaurant and orders a steak plain, I can almost guarantee you that you could drive 5 minutes down the road to another restaurant that sells, like, say you order a New York steak from here, not my company, but from restaurant A, and you drive down 5 minutes to restaurant B and you order a New York with no seasoning, they're pretty much going to taste the same, because they were all raised the same, fed empty calories, just fed to get fat. They're harvested way too early. Their saturated fatty acids are off the charts. When you have a diverse diet, a more natural diet, like, for instance, our chickens, we do corn and soy free, right? So there's other things in there, and it's a diverse blend of grain that we feed them. Plus, they are on pasture every day, move to new pasture every day. So they get the nutrients from the grass. They get the nutrients and all the minerals, vitamins and minerals from the dirt that they're scratching in, from the bugs that they're eating, from the sunlight that they're getting. Plus the grain that we're feeding them, that is what creates the nutrient dense food that you then ingest. People say that we are what we eat, but we are what we eat. You see what I mean? So
absolutely,
what we feed the animal that we eat or the plant that we eat is what gets put into our body. So that's something that for me has, and learning that process and caring about it has made me way more vigilant in what we sell people, has me have way more pride in what we sell people, knowing that our chicken is some of the healthiest chicken. I'm going to really quickly, I'm going to find this email because we just got some of our chicken tested. And it really is some of the healthiest chicken that you can get.
Well, it's awesome that you mentioned that you're soy and corn free, because that's very tough. And what a lot of folks don't realize with that, it completely, with the omega 3 and 6 ratios, just jacks that completely all up, which that causes chronic inflammation. Because not even talking about seed oils, but that's a huge issue, is just the omega ratios. And having these high PUFA chickens, especially in grocery stores, it might taste good because they usually do taste good. But it's not healthy.
They're injected with stuff like saline and flavors and all this kind of stuff. And just to get more weight into it, I found it now. Our chicken had greater than 2 times more unsaturated fatty acids than saturated fatty acids. In addition, we had significant levels of both EPA and DHA omega-3s. The amount of CLA was over 22% of total fat. There was also about 6.4 additional omega-3s from the shorter chain PUFAs.
That's awesome.
Right? So we're literally raising some of the best chicken, healthiest chicken that you can get.
Well, I was just curious to hear, so from those folks that were mentioning that your chicken's much smaller, I'd just be curious to hear any stories just from those conversations since they've become, I guess, customers.
Yeah. So they're, all of them are like, it tastes like chicken. Like there's a flavor to it. And they're like, finally. Like when you take a bite of it, it actually tastes like something. It doesn't taste like maybe the marinade or the this or the that that you want to throw it in. When they take a bite of the skin, they're like, it's like when they cook it, grill it or something like that, they're like, it crispy like a potato chip. It's thin. It's not super thick and chewy and you know, like gross. It's like, yeah, and that's what they love about it, is that they know that it's clean. They know that it doesn't have steroids in it, doesn't have hormones in it. It wasn't fed soy and corn and all this other stuff that's confusing our bodies. I mean, with everything going on in the world, the last thing we need is extra hormones, more hormones that we put into our body. We need to get all that stuff out. We need to go back to a good baseline, eating whole foods, sourcing your protein, like you've brought up multiple times, know your rancher, know local. And if you can't find that, there's places that you can go, right? Browsy Acres is one of them. I know I'm the owner, but it's like, that's our goal. That's our mission, is that you can feel good about buying from us, because we take on that extra workload to make sure that these animals are treated correctly and fed the correct kind of foods so that it benefits you the most.
Do you remember the very first customer you had? I was just curious, especially because even as you were talking about the process of Kobe, it's even a different experience too, going through that whole process and then having that customer and then developing that relationship. So I'd just be curious to hear that.
So we had customers before we even had customers, and the way that worked was, I like to be a neighbor to my people, to the people close to me, right? And we just had this amazing harvest, and I wanted to share it with people. I gave some people ground or some roasts or something like that, and like we had a neighbor that he was like, I gave him maybe like 6 pounds or something like that. And he was like, I couldn't stop eating it. It was so good. So that really stands out to me, is trying to bring people in the general region closer. You know what I mean? By sharing food. I remember some of our first customers. So in the very beginning, in 2020, we only had 3 full blood Wagyu for the year, right? So we're sitting there like, how do we do this? How do we spread this out over a year until our next harvest? Because if we just put everything up for sale, I had a feeling that we would sell out. Maybe it would take 3 or 4 months, but then we would have 9 months of nothing. Do you see what I mean? And for a company mm-hmm. that's, I would rather pace it out. And so what we did is we came up with a lottery system. So it sounds kind of funny, but what we did is you would put your name into our email, right? Into this, it would automatically generate a certain amount of winners or draw names, right? Basically. And so the first one, I think we had like 1700 people put in for 15 boxes. You know what I mean? And it was like, see, like if we just threw this stuff up for sale, it'd be gone already, right? And so we had 15 quote unquote winners. Well, that was an interesting conversation because people weren't understanding what it was. They some of them thought we were just giving stuff away, and it was like, no, this is so that we can, like, as a company, we need to be able to spread this out. And so you basically won the opportunity to buy a box, right? Like, if you don't want to buy it, if you don't want to purchase this box, we'll go down the line and we'll find somebody that will. The first 15 people bought it up. They were like, 100%. We would love to support you guys. We love what you're doing. You know, it's awesome. And at that time, we weren't even a regenerative ranch yet. It was just, this is what Rhonda and Travis were getting into, was this Wagyu. And we were telling the story of Kobe. And then later to come, it would be Porter and then Bavette and stuff like that. And people were just so willing to support us. And it was so amazing to see and watch and be a part of. And those people, their biggest complaint is that they didn't get more. You know, that yeah. was like, and we were at that time, we were priced a little bit heavy because we didn't have much to sell. It's like supply and demand kind of a thing. And we wanted to just continue getting our name out there and what we were doing and how that happened. And then 2021, fast forward a year, we started the regenerative style. And then we continued to do that until we continued to do the lottery until maybe, I'd say like a year and a half ago now was our last lottery. And the entire time it was like 1,000 emails would sign up for these 15 boxes. But it was great, right? And so now though, now we have our first main harvest. We just had it this last fall. Our freezers are full of protein and ready to ship nationwide. So I know we were kind of talking about like getting to know your local farmers and stuff like that, but this is the journey that we had to take in order to get here, to be able to serve more people with this amazing protein.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many levels to it all in terms of that. Cause I do say know your inch a lot, but at the same time, buying from you or there's perennial pastures in San Diego is a lot better, and you're supporting regenerative farms rather than going to a grocery store that might just be buying from a conventionally industrial factory farm, which are absolutely horrific. So it's still in the right step. And yeah, no, I'll just leave it at that. I'm curious though, since you are first generational too, what's it been like from a family standpoint of raising your kids and then being with Rhonda on that farm?
So right now it's, I'll tell you that my kids have grown up with a lot more sense of responsibility than I did. Having the animals to take care of, no matter if you're sick or injured or just don't feel like it, or whatever it is that you have going on in your life, this keeps pulling you back and it grounds you. And I think, I could have used that a little more when I was a kid. And I'm glad that my kids have been a part of this. Every harvest that we have, I give them the choice. I don't make them do anything, right? But it's like, do you guys want to come be a part of this? And they're like, absolutely. Because they have this sense of responsibility. They helped take care of that animal. They fed that animal. They cleaned its pen. They, whatever it is, whatever's needed, they've helped doctor it. You know, we for our bull calves that we breed here, because we have a mama cow here that we breed whenever she's ready. And the last two, she's had bull calves. So, you know, we castrate them here. My boys are there with me. So it's been, you know, they're a part of that. And so then when they get to eat that meat, it's like there's a sense of responsibility, of ownership, of pride for them. When their friends come over, you know, this is the burger joint, this house. People are like, you know, to my boys, hey, let's go to your place. Cause you know, we also have a pool here, but they get to like hang out. They hang out at the swim and have a good time. And old Papa Brown over here whipping up Wagyu double doubles, you know, like they're just like, this is the best burger ever. You know what I mean? Like little kids that are 5 years old up to grown men are their parents, right? Having 15, 20 people here, they're like, dude, let's whip up some burgers. That's, you know, I'm always like, you know, we'll do brisket. And then I love to cut up brisket and make brisket tacos. It's the absolute best.
Yeah.
So it's like, whenever I do stuff like that, it's like, everybody's here. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
And I love that because we get to be that house, you know, that we get to be like, we get to bring people together, not just because like we're good people, but the food brings us all together and we raise that food. My boys raise that food. My wife raised that food, and that food is what brings people together.
Agreed. So again, going back to the farm I worked on, they had two young kids themselves, and it was just really fascinating to watch them too. I mean, very similar to how you're describing with your experiences. It definitely adds the responsibilities, and they want to help out. I would do all the farmers markets, and the daughter always wanted to go, and she would always help out and help take orders. The son always wanted to be out in the fields, and that's what's always so interesting. And then going back to your point of just the constant life and death of that just cyclical nature, you see it all the time on the farm, and I did not experience that growing up. So it's really interesting that as a kid, you get way more responsibility. Everything you're saying is just so true, just because of being on that land and just seeing how the real world and the nature actually operates.
Yeah. And I didn't have that growing up, and I'm glad that my kids do, because I have that now, and I know what it's taught me now, you know, at the age of 41 now, and what it's taught me in the last 5 years, six years since Kobe, and what it means to take responsibility for your food. And I'm so glad that my kids get to grow up with that.
So my final question would be, I just lost my train of thought, damn it. Sorry about that.
All right. No, it's all right.
This will be edited out. So it's all
no, good. I have a question for you, actually. If, you know, maybe it'll give you time to think about your question or whatever.
Yeah.
But what made you decide to go vegan? Or was it vegan or vegetarian?
Vegan. And I was vegan. Really strong about that.
Okay. So what made you go vegan? And then what brought you back from that?
So growing up, my dream job was to be a veterinarian. So I'd always loved animals and fascinated by that. And then fast forward to grad school, I took a class at the Indianapolis Zoo observing orangutans. And that was the first thing that got the wheel spinning in my head, because it made me really despise zoos and just how we treated animals. And then fast forward more years, I started thinking about industrial factory farming. I had never watched any YouTube or any of the documentaries that people talk about. I just remember thinking to myself that I thought I could thrive and survive as a human without the needing of killing an animal. So I went vegan overnight. And those 2.5 years, I was very morally convicted with it all. But what was interesting is I couldn't stand the culture of veganism. So I had no vegan friends. I disassociated with them. But I remember after my brother passed away in 2021, I started using Twitter a lot. And it was just the people that I were following really started sharing the details and the studies of animal protein and then things like soy and the really bad effects of all that. And then I just realized how wrong I was with all of that. In conjunction with learning about regenerative agriculture and realizing, oh, there is a way different way. Because all vegans, all I talked about was factory farming. That's not everything, clearly. And so, yeah, that changed really quickly. Because I went from being a vegan to a year later, being on a farm, processing chickens. And it was just from the research and the folks that I was following.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I feel like that, you know, my wife is a lot better at having the patience with people that come angry on our page, right? And they're like, stop murdering animals and, you know, that kind of stuff. I tend to ignore them because I don't even want to get into it. And your ignorance is what's going to be your downfall. And that's, you know, but if somebody wanted to come and have a discussion, right? Like you want to talk about this, please leave your emotions, right? You can talk about your emotions, but leave your emotions at the door when we talk about this, right? And I can do that. But the people that just come at you with, you know, calling you names and this, that, and the other, my wife will talk them off the ledge. I tend to just say, whatever, go, you know what, yourself. Because I just don't have time to deal with it. But
yeah,
the people that I've really, that I have talked to, it is a lot of times more of a moral thing than it is a taste or texture or they don't like it.
For
it's
sure.
Like they don't like the killing of an animal, right? And what I've really learned is that even, and I don't want to, I'm not bad mouthing anybody, but a lot of vegetarians or vegans don't understand that so many more animals die in the crop fields than on a cattle ranch. You know, yeah. So if you want to talk about a moral high ground, right? Please understand that, again, I said it earlier, something has to die in order for you to live. And in those soybean fields, corn fields, first of all, how are they grown? What are the minerals like in the soil, right? There's like something like 52 vitamins and minerals that go into healthy soil to grow stuff. And we've gotten down to where the FDA only allows like, or only makes you have maybe 8 or 10 of those minerals or vitamins or minerals in the soil in order for it, you'd be able to sell it. And you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. Talk about nutrition, talk about like the problems that we're having with the obesity and stuff like that. And talk about your food, but also talk about the animals that died, all of the rabbits and squirrels and moles and insects and birds and deer and raccoons and possums and all this stuff that is not allowed in those fields. And then let's talk about also the poisons that are put on those plants so that these, for the insecticides and all that kind of stuff. It's like, man, just because you're not eating it doesn't mean it's not happening.
Absolutely. Right? Agreed.
Like, and that's where I feel like if people could just be honest with themselves, I eat animals. I eat animal protein. I'm okay with that. An animal dies for me to live. I'm okay with that. But be honest with yourself as well. Please.
So with my instance too, to add on to that, was the last realization I had, we advanced so far as a human species on animal-based diet. No vegan diet ever has advanced us this far. And that single thing for me was being honest with myself there. It's just like, oh, yeah, there's a reason for that.
Definitely. Yeah.
So the final question I had, I now remember, with just the direction of Browse Acres. So you started with just the broilers, and then you had Kobe, and then you're continuing on that journey, and you yourself are becoming very passionate about it all, going to the conference. I'm just curious, where do you see or want to take Browse Acres to just long term?
So the first thing that we want to do is maximize this one ranch. Bringing in more birds, like as we're able, like here's another important part why you should support small ranchers, local ranchers, why you should get to know them, is because that's what's going to help them build their infrastructure. That's what's going to help them maximize their land and put the most into their land so that they can serve you better. So that then they can start taking over where these conglomerate companies, these huge, the Bill Gates of the world, are buying these farmlands and turning them into whatever he wants. You support these local small ranchers that you know that they are morally on the same level as you, so that they can maximize their ranch. That's the initial goal for us, is the acreage that we have combined between ours and our partner's ranch, maximize that to its fullest potential, which we should be able to hold anywhere between 750 to 1,000 head of cattle. We should be able to run 30 to 40,000 birds a year on a low end. We want to bring in eggers or layers. We want to bring in pigs. Those two we have not incorporated yet because we've invested into the cows, into the cattle, and then also into the broilers. And so as soon as that starts bringing our return, and we can reinvest that money into bringing layers and pork into the ecosystem, but maximizing our land first, and then after that, what we want to do is, we have a plan, my wife and I have a plan, to move back to Hawaii. That's where I'm from. I want to replicate this in Hawaii. I want to feed Hawaiians the healthiest kind of beef, chicken, pork that they can get. And then expand that to in the other states. I think, yeah, expand, like if we get into other states and we can serve those communities, and it won't be such a tax on them, on their pocketbook, for supporting us with shipping and that whole bear. You know what I mean? That's been such a cluster, trying to figure that out. Getting to the point where we're literally setting up small pickup spots in different cities. We will, you know, as I'm driving up and down California and up to Oregon and stuff like that, we have different pickup spots for people so that they don't have to pay for shipping. I'm actually about to go out to Hawaii. My cousin started a food truck called Meat and Buns. He sells Wagyu burgers with our beef, and he's going to start selling our cuts out of that food truck, right? So, like, I had to figure out shipping to get it over there at a cost that makes sense. And so it's like setting up these little hubs all over to help take away that extra expense of shipping. But as we start to grow this ranch to maximize each piece of land that we get, we want to expand and go do this again in another state, somewhere else, somewhere that we can serve the community with some of the best tasting, some of the most nutritious, healthy protein that you can get.
That's freaking awesome. For all of the listeners, where could they go to just learn more and just follow along with what you're doing?
Yeah, so we're on all social media platforms, Browsey Acres, Browsey Acres. You can go to our website for any and all of our products, browseyacres.com. Again, Browsey Acres.com. We ship to all 50 states. And we are working on getting that shipping down for you guys, I promise. This is something that we are incredibly passionate about, and we want to feed people. We want to share what the experience that we had with anybody else that wants to join in.
Awesome. Well, thank you for joining, Travis.
Yeah. Thanks, my man. Appreciate it.
You can find the full video on YouTube at The Renaissance.